available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network here in 2022.
Holy cow, it's 2022. That's not the way you usually end that, David Woods.
No, I gave you some extra words.
There were some words there I was expecting. And you sort of just kind of ended abruptly where you do that. You interview someone sometimes. They just end a sentence sort of abruptly. You're like, are you done? I'm not sure.
But that's not someone. That's always a 16-year-old high school recruit. They never give you what you need. They never give you a reasonable end to a sentence. It's just like, oh, I'm supposed to ask something else now.
Right, exactly. But anyway, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site. On the 24/7 Sports Network, and together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. I've taped all the bowl games, Dave, so I'm going to watch them later. We'll still recap them, but I assume the Pac-12 did well.
I would think probably at least a few wins in there, right? There were five Pac-12 bowl games. There had to have been at least a few.
Yeah.
This is the Conference of Champions.
Because 2020... the Pac-12 didn't win any bowl games, so I assume in 2021 that's been rectified.
That's all luck, right? That's just pure variance. Of course, I would even guess probably they won four of the five, right?
I assume so. I'll look it up here real quick when we get to that. But until then, I want to let everyone know how you can get a hold of us. You can email us pac12podcast@gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678 over on the Twitters. At Pac-12 Podcast is where we be. Pac-12podcast.com is the website with all of our old shows. And over at Reddit, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions, to discuss what's going on with the Pac-12. Those four out of five wins, we assume. You can do all that over on the Reddit channel. And then if you have Apple Podcasts, the app on your iPhone or your iPad or wherever, please follow the Podcast of Champions and rate us with 5 stars. Write anything up there. And, we usually read some of these things. I don't know if we're going to be doing that all the time, but we'll do some of it. I don't know if we have any new ones, David.
We have zero new ones. I would describe our listener base as lackluster at best. I would say that they have gotten lazy. They've gotten fat and happy. and I think we need to whip them back into shape.
We have to do that. So get in there and leave us 5 stars. Say something funny about us. It could be positive. Better if
it's
negative.
Hopefully negative.
Yeah, hopefully negative. And we would love to read it on the air. You could tell us how dumb we are, how ugly we are, how we don't know anything about football. We shouldn't have a podcast. Any of the things, if you leave us 5 stars, we will read them. And we would probably agree with you.
Yeah, exactly.
well, we'll get to the bowls in a minute. So I still got to pull it up on the Google and see how the Pac-12 did. And we'll let everyone know. We don't have any spoilers or anything. But we've heard a couple times from... Commissioner George Kliavkov, he did a story with the LA Times, and maybe this is sort of a spoiler because he didn't really talk about how poorly the Pac-12 did. Obviously,
Let me just look it up really quick because I see what the record was. All right, hang on. All right, they didn't win that one, but they probably won. Oh no, not that one either. Okay, all right. Well, then they probably won the last. No. Wow. Oh wow.
Rose Bowl. Ohio State had a whole bunch of opt-outs, so I assume Utah won the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, look at the third quarter.
Central Michigan got added to the Pac-12 due to COVID things, we're looking at another 0-5 here.
Yikes. But George Kliavkov talked about that and the investment into football, how he's been discussing that with all of the Pac-12 programs, where you're not necessarily neglecting Olympic sports, but you can make the Olympic sports better if you refocus resources on football. He didn't seem very happy with the postseason performance. And I think he brought up, at least in the LA Times article, about the worst overall percentage as far as out of conference games since 1983. I think it was 9-23 against the FBS programs. And that started off with a huge win over Ohio State by Oregon, and obviously UCLA's win over LSU. Some promising developments early on in the out-of-conference season. And there were some bad ones too, obviously Montana, things like that, losing to a couple FCS schools. But I would say, overall, 9-23, that's pretty abysmal. The bowl game record, pretty abysmal. And it seemed like George Klafkoff was, interested in solving that. But I don't know if you read any of those or saw some. I think he went on with John Canzado this week also. But, he seemed pretty frustrated, which a lot of Pac-12 fans are too.
Yeah, I think this year in particular was awful in a way that, we had talked about, other years being particularly bad. But this one actually was. It actually was tremendously bad. It was, so SRS, that handy little historical statistic I've talked to you about that you were using for USC, it also does it for conferences. And if you go back, aside from 2020, which is really not a fair, rating because there wasn't really a non-conference season. If you go back, this year's rating for the Pac-12 is the lowest since it was not the Pac-12, but the Association of Western Universities. Back in 1961.
Wow.
This is the worst the Pac-12 has been since then. This is the absolute low point. So he's coming in at the best and or worst possible time to be the guy who fixes things, because I can imagine this being galvanizing for him. But it is the absolute low point. This truly was a horrible season for the Pac-12. In a way that people were exaggerating that about 2019, 2018, 2017, just because there wasn't a playoff team. Those weren't good years, but they weren't this. This was horrible. Absolutely, yeah. The worst year, probably, if you're being real, the worst year ever for the Pac-12.
Crazy how bad it is. And, I guess there's no place to go but up. Maybe that's a positive for George Klafkoff, but
yeah, it's probably not going to be this bad again. There was some very specific factors at play, a lot of talk going into the season about the lack of experienced quarterbacking in the league. There was some legitimate soft factors that played into it, and there have been some coaching changes that you have to feel pretty good about riding the ship at some of these programs that were pretty bad this year. Washington and USC both took massive steps back that weren't necessarily expected, and both of those, they've got new head coaches now, so you can reasonably expect them to be better next year and then potentially really good again within a couple of years. So there's some soft stuff that's already going to change, but the trajectory of the league is not good since 2013. It is on a downward path, and I don't think it can continue too much further beyond what it did this year, but still there's some larger, bigger picture things that need to, be focused on from the commissioner's office. I won't say solved, because I don't think a lot of this can be solved at the commissioner level. A lot of it is just simple demographic stuff that's actually never going to be solved. But there is some stuff that they can start doing, things they can influence in terms of scheduling that may or may not fix some elements of this.
Yeah, he's talked about that, trying to get to the 8-game conference schedule as early as possible, but pretty much need the Big Ten to do that. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to fill the entire, inventory, I guess, of out-of-conference games. BYU joining a conference doesn't really help, because that's fewer games, 5 games this year. I think it's 5 in 2022 as well. And if you think about it, man, that Ohio State win by Oregon sort of carried the conference for 2 months, right?
Yeah.
That kept Oregon in the top, in the top three or whatever, until the loss of Stanford, but still, there was optimism. That was just a, stub your toe sort of thing until Oregon fell apart late and got crushed by Utah. But man, that one win just, it was like the life preserver for the Pac-12.
Well, it was disguising a lot of things, not just about the league, but about Oregon itself, because Oregon, if you were following along, the advanced stats ratings for Oregon, they were never a top 10 team. ever, and they shouldn't have been considered one. Like the way they were playing games and winning games was a lot of by the skin of their teeth. And it wasn't a dominant team by any stretch of the imagination. So they caught Ohio State, I think, on a bad Ohio State day, and they played their absolute best game on that day, and they won by 7, I think. So I think it was something that disguised things, and maybe it would have continued to disguise things if they'd been able to hold on, or even if Utah had beaten Ohio State, maybe the Pac-12 could have said, well, our two best teams were better than, you know, one of the top five teams in the country, probably in Ohio State. So that's something to hang our hat on, but they couldn't say that after Utah lost that game.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to, we can either shut down the podcast or we're just going to keep trudging on and say, okay, it's going to get better.
I think
here.
we committed early on in the history of this podcast to continue doing it, even if the Pac-12 folded. So okay. I think we're not quite there yet. So we got to keep soldiering on.
We're close to folding. Like the Pac-12 is close to just imploding, right? Like right. It's not the Big 12 is looking better, which is bad.
Yeah. No, we will continue this even after it becomes lacrosse only.
Yeah. Do you remember early, this is months ago, Arizona State, there was a lot of optimism going into the season. Things sort of fell apart. It was this NCAA investigation that, and I forget the term Herm Edwards used. It wasn't an investigation. It was like a...
an internal review, something like that?
A review. Yeah, review. Yeah. Well, yesterday, our buddy Chris Cartman posted that he expects Arizona State to self-impose, he calls them limitations this year. So we would use the word sanctions usually. And he gave some examples. He said some of the specific details may be difficult to obtain in the short term, but in anticipation of what Arizona State's likely facing in the form of looming level one football recruiting infractions, you should expect self-imposed sanctions to begin this year. So this is what he was hearing. And he said some of these are likely and all of them potentially happen, but a postseason bowl ban, if Arizona State does get to, six or more wins, reduction in the number of days that ASU football coaches go on the road recruiting and contact periods, reductions of scholarships, reductions of official visitors that ASU could host, or some of the ones that he had mentioned. So, and he talked about doing this, making a stronger case for the NCAA. So basically you punish yourself and then, it's more likely that the NCAA will say, okay, well, you punish yourself. That's enough.
You know, the obvious one that you do when you're facing a significant potential imposition of outside sanctions, the obvious one, fire your head coach.
Nope, that didn't happen.
What are you doing, ASU?
Yeah.
Like, what about the Herm Edwards era has got you pumped up enough that you want to stick with it?
Yeah. I mean, he talks about that. It says it would put more or most of repercussions for the recruiting wrongdoing on the existing staff as opposed to a new staff. So if they did hire someone, you could say, hey, we're going to fire the staff now. So maybe it's just a card you wait to play. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Whole lot of 8-5 to be excited about, I guess.
Yeah, that was a weird one. But not good recruiting. It just seems like things are a mess right now, and you've sort of extended. There was a problem hiring Herm. There was some good stuff that happened. Maybe better than we thought at the beginning, but it just didn't get a whole lot better. I was listening to the George Reister podcast, the Apostles one, and they had talked about this was like the worst passing offense that Arizona State's had since like 1983 or so. It was like a long time. They hit a whole bunch of games where he didn't have a passing touchdown.
That's the thing is, yeah, it was not an embarrassment the way we might have thought it might be, given basically what we knew about Herm Edwards is that he was a meme. But it wasn't an embarrassment. So I think that got us all like, oh, well, maybe it'll be fine. Jaden Daniels has gotten worse every single year he's been at ASU.
Yeah.
Do you remember how good he was as a freshman?
Oh, yeah.
Weird. And now he's not good. He's bad. He's a bad quarterback. What happened? Why are you doing that? What's going on, ASU?
I don't know.
You don't need to keep this staff. Like, Ray Anderson, this doesn't need to happen anymore. Don't do this to the fans.
Ray and Herm are obviously tied at the hip. They also was like the worst – as far as penalties go, like the worst season like ever or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like what it was bad. They beat one team with a winning record. That was UCLA, and UCLA didn't beat any teams with a winning record. So like that's sort of where this was the year for the taking of the Pac-12 South. And I mean, Utah came on at the end, but if Arizona State kind of played well throughout it, they could have you know, been there, but they obviously were not. So we'll see if they do announce some self-sanctions, but Chris Cartman was reporting that, so I thought I would pass that along. I mean, there's so many transfers happening. Is there anything that stands out to you, like assistant coaches, transfers, anything off the top of your head?
One of the craziest things that happened, this is UCLA specific, but I think it's an interesting insight into the logistics of the portal. So Dylan Gabriel, the big time quarterback out of what was it, UCF?
UCF, yeah.
Yeah, UCF. He committed to UCLA out of the transfer portal after, you know, a sterling career at UCF. And UCLA thought it had its post Dorian Thompson Robinson era, you know, ready to go, right? And then Caleb Williams from Oklahoma, like a week ago, announces he's going into the portal. And literally within a day, Dylan Gabriel says, okay, I'm going to Oklahoma now. And it's just like
it was like the day before he's going to enroll, yeah, or something.
And you know, I'm big on player freedom and guys being able to move wherever they want to, but not when it affects my enjoyment of the sport. And it's affecting my enjoyment of the sport right now. So I'm going to become an old stick in the mud and a very conservative minded fellow and say no. I stand astride the tides of history and I say no. Stop. No longer.
There's a difference between like freedom and then like complete free agency chaos.
No, I mean, it is good. It is good, but it is the trade-off. The trade-off is that you don't really know where it's going to end up. And it's unlike free agency in that there's still the structures in place are not signed contracts. They're like grants and aid and stuff, which provide more freedom than you even get in like NBA free agency. Because in the NBA free agency, you sign a contract, you're now bound by that contract. But in this, you sign your grant and aid and the school's bound, but you're not until you actually go to school. So when it happens over, you know, December, winter break, the whole thing, it's like 2 weeks of, yeah, I'm securing my spot, but I'm going to keep my eyes open, which is great. I love that the players have this freedom, but it does make things, I don't know, even more topsy-turvy in this than it feels like even regular recruiting is. It can be very interesting. And I think it's interesting because UCLA has put a lot of its eggs in the basket of transfer portal recruiting. I think under the understanding that these guys are more mature and they're less likely to do the like song and dance recruiting stuff. And then this happens to them with their quarterback. So
important position.
Yeah. It's just interesting to watch that all play out. So I think one of the biggest things transfer portal wise that everyone's going to be watching is where Caleb Williams goes. I know that there was some speculation about USC. I know there's some ongoing speculation about UCLA potentially being a destination. I firmly and wholeheartedly believe he's going SEC, but we will see. But yeah, I mean, it's the transfer portal. It's going to be fun, I think, for the next month.
Yeah, some small school, like, I forget what it was, Eastern Michigan or something, like off like some.
Yeah,
Charlie Batch
offered $1 million from his capital company.
$1 million, like, hey, come here and play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this could be crazy. He's maybe the biggest name to enter the transfer portal. Like, you know, he's up there. The biggest name this season, I would say. So that's it. But we haven't even heard from Dorian Thompson Robinson, right? Like, he could be back.
He's still deciding. The three guys deciding for UCLA are DTR. The three guys who really everyone should know and that matter are DTR, Charbonnet, and Sean Ryan, the left tackle. They're still on the fence. So obviously the deadline's looming. I think it's not much more than a week away now. So there's a lot that's going to shake out in the next couple of days.
Yeah, for sure. You know, USC, same thing. They're going to have a bunch of roster turnover. Keaton Slovis is going to Pitt. You know, there's a couple names there, but we've heard that they could have up to, like, I don't know about the UCLA levels, but like, you know, 30, 35 guys turned over on the roster. So we'll see what Lincoln Riley can do. But yeah, I try to retweet the good ones I see from the Podcast of Champions Twitter feed, but there's been so many, like, this guy's going here, this guy's going there. They hired this coach. There's a lot going on. So I think when this all kind of settles down, well, maybe we can do a deep dive on each program, like sort of an off season thing.
Yeah. We should do a transfer portal analysis, like who's leaving and who's coming in for everybody. Cause I think it doesn't make sense to do it as much real time, but like once we get a gauge of it, almost treating it like recruiting itself, where it's just, okay, how's the roster changing for each of these teams? Maybe we can get the different pubs on to kind of go into it.
That would be good. And I mean, yeah. So what's like school starts for everyone? I think UCLA is on a quarter system, so they just started, but for the semesters, like they'll start like next week. And once school starts, then there's going to be less, like you said, like you're going to be enrolled there, like transferring at that point. There's sort of like still the ongoing silly season. So, but, and you know, the Ducks coaching wise, I think someone called it like the show cause crew or something like that. Like there's a bunch of guys like Tosh LaPoint, like people that have previously, maybe there have been some recruiting discretions. The Ducks have brought him in up there. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
No, not really.
All right. We'll see. It's still like, that's another thing too. Once there's still some things happen, we've seen coaches like USC didn't announce, but a couple of coaches that USC looked to be getting that they changed their Twitter profile and stuff. And then, oh, they end up someplace else.
So that was the part I was going to bring up, is like the way that has happened at USC is something absurd. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that before, because that's two coaches now who were hired by USC who then moved on to different positions, the same basic position at a different school.
Yeah. There was one that was like a kind of promotion. This happened like Clay Helton did this, like when USC hired Clay Helton to come in, and I was late. Lane Kiffin hired him. Like, he had like a month ago, took a job at Arkansas State. And then, you know, you hire him away. So like, you see this, it does happen where guys are, and these weren't announced coaches. Like Clay Elton was like announced in there. These were just like, they're still like signing the contracts or still doing all that stuff. Usually it takes a while, the background checks and all that, but they at least changed their Twitter bios, and you'd assumed, okay, so they're working for USC now. And now they're not. So, so there's the coaching carousel. It wasn't just head coaches. There was assistant coaching weird stuff going on too.
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, Oregon's they're collecting all the, Jim Mora's old staff again. So, it's funny that Mario Cristobal didn't do that, since he is Jim Mora. Yeah. That's for you, Hifladay. That's for you, baby.
The strength and conditioning coach followed, the guy curly mustache guy. Why am I blanking on his name? He's going down to Miami.
Because it doesn't matter. Because his name does not matter.
Oh, but that guy, the curly mustache guy.
His name is Aaron Feld, but his name doesn't matter.
He's down in. So we'll try to. I think we can do that because there's been so much roster turnover, coaching turnover. Maybe we get each pub on for 10 minutes and talk about the different programs, things that was going on. I think that would be good kind of leading into spring football. That will take a little planning and work. So this will
So that sounds like a job
be on my shoulders.
Yeah, it sounds like a job for me.
Yes. All right. Why don't we do our last 2021
Pac-12 roundup
and go over these bowl games that apparently the Pac-12 did not do well in. We talked about the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl earlier. And so next up, we have the Alamo Bowl that was dealing with
Oregon Ducks
taking on the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah.
What was my thing for the Sooners?
Oh, you had a funny one.
I guess we got here early. Let's go steal some land. Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, swept Oregon off the field. This was a ugly ass game. Anthony Brown's final stat line does not necessarily do it justice. He was horrible in this first half, especially. Oklahoma was up 30-3 at halftime. Ryan,
wait,
not 33-30.
That's close. Okay,
30-3.
Oh,
at halftime, it was bad. Oregon slapped on some junk time points, but it was junk time the entire second half. Caleb Williams is really good. Whoever gets him is going to be really happy. Oregon's defense didn't show up at all. Oklahoma ran the ball all over him. It was kind of depressing to watch. But Anthony Brown, really not good. again, his stat line, you look at it, you're like, oh, 306 yards, three touchdowns, only a pick. He was bad. He was really bad, especially in that first half. And defensively, they couldn't do anything against Oklahoma. Really bad game. Not fun to watch.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Oklahoma pretty much dominated this one. 8.1 yards per play. Like, that's a lot. 560 total yards. Yeah, you know, but it just seemed like you had two teams that had interim coaches. Oklahoma had an advantage there with Bob Stoops as your interim coach. But Caleb Williams, I thought he looked really good. He didn't, you know, he didn't throw for as many yards as Anthony Brown did, but, you know, they ran the ball for over 300 yards. And I think when you can do that, you can just control things. Now, the Ducks came out. I think they scored.
Oh, you think when you run the ball for over 300 yards, you can just control things?
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for your insight, Ryan. Yeah. When you run the ball for over 300 yards, you're going to win. You're going to win the football game. Find me how many people have run for over 300 yards and have lost.
This is a weird one, though, because there was only one turnover in the whole game, the one pick. But it was such a, you know, commanding lead, and you just felt like Oklahoma at halftime didn't have to do much. They scored a couple touchdowns in the third quarter. Oregon scored three, I believe, and not much going on in the fourth. It was just one of those games where you just cut out to this big lead, and then you're sort of like cruise the rest of the way. And, you know, look at the final score, 47-32, like, oh, kind of close, right? Like, no, it was not close.
No, not close.
Who did you pick in this one?
Don't worry about it.
No, you picked Oklahoma. We did both I? Picked Oklahoma. Yeah. It okay. was their favorite by 4.5.
Okay.
And we got this one easily wrapped this one up. So I was 2-0 in the bowls at this point. So I was feeling pretty good at myself. Okay.
Yeah.
Next up, we got the Vegas Bowl with our favorites over there.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
This was so Wisconsin Badger, 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 Snake, Snake. Anyway, Wisconsin won 20-13. It was simultaneously the most Wisconsin ass football game and the most Herm Edwards ass football game, because neither team did anything offensively, really. Like, it was not, this was an unenjoyable football game, which I'm going to be saying a lot. So just hold on to that.
Okay.
It was unenjoyable, but also it was a one score game. ASU had no business being in a one score game against Wisconsin. Wisconsin was up 20-6 at halftime. Felt like they had full control over the game, but it just kind of, oh, we don't really want to score anymore. ASU throws in a touchdown, but just nothing happened. This was a miserable football game to watch. Jaden Daniels is not good right now. Somebody needs to do something there, because I am depressed watching Jaden Daniels play football right now.
Yeah, it's not fun. I don't have, you know, sometimes you watch a football game, you're watching the Green Bay Packers. I know you don't like the NFL, but it's like 3rd and 11. And you're like, okay, well, this is a punt. You know, if you like, oh, Aaron Rodgers, like, he'll find somebody and he's got a, you know, coin flip to make a first down here. Like, I just didn't feel like, I don't have the, because you have confidence, like, he's going to do something. He's going to make a play. Even if they get pressure, he might escape the pocket and just find someone downfield. Like, I don't feel like very confident at all in when I watch him. Like, if things are going according to schedule and they're running the football or whatever and setting up third and shorts, fine. But I don't feel confident in that he could just go back there and make a play. And that's, 2 years ago, I think I did. And I feel like you've lost confidence in what his ability to go out there and make plays.
Absolutely. And it seems like, you know, ASU may have, because they punted the ball away on the Wisconsin side of the field with less than 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And you know what, Ryan, I got a little thing to tell you. They never got the ball back. Wisconsin drove the field 18 plays, 90 yards in almost 10 minutes of game time to ice the game, at the end of which they didn't score. They were just like, no, we're good. We'll chill out here at the ASU 8.
A 9 minute, 53 second drive, 90 yards. I mean, it's insane.
Incredible.
That's, if you end it like that, like, it's like the 4 minute drill, you know, times 2.5. You're like, okay.
No, Wisconsin definitely practices an 8 minute drill.
Oh, they do. Yeah. This is like, that was ideal. Like, no,
that's just how they play football.
We didn't execute this quite right. We should have, you know, we should have had to go 90 yards. We should have been able to do this in 80. You know, we got an extra first down there we didn't want. It was sort of a battle of attrition too. I know there was opt-outs from Arizona State, Washington. Wisconsin had four starters out and they lost players during the game. And it just wasn't, Vegas is great. This wasn't a great game to watch. And if you're going to do, there's styles of play, and sometimes you just do whatever you can do to disrupt what the other team's doing and don't let them play their style of play. And Arizona State was not able to do this. This was Wisconsin's style of play the entire night. And just like you said, the way it ended, 14 point halftime lead. ASU made it a little bit closer, but it wasn't that close. Wisconsin could have done a lot more, but they just did exactly what they had to do to sort of like boa constrictor ASU, and they were helpless. It was just like you're watching the life just drip out of your body and there's nothing you could do about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I got this one right. So Wisconsin was favored by 6, won by 7. I was getting a little worried there, though, because they weren't, you know, they looked at a 1-point lead. I think they would have looked at it as insurmountable. They just weren't going to do anything else. But they had a 7-point lead, and they sort of choked the life out of the game. So that's how that one ended. Okay, next up, we get to use this one. The Sun Bowl with
Washington State Cougars.
Against the Central Michigan. What the hell are they?
I don't know what they are.
Central Michigan is the Chippewas?
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds about right.
So is that another...
Yeah.
Chippewas is just the Native American, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Well, we should know them because they beat Washington State. So Central Michigan won 24-21. It was sort of, you know, the classic game of two halves. Central Michigan jumped out to a 21-point lead in the first half. Washington State not looking good. Jaden Delora went out. Victor Gabalas came in to play quarterback. They made a big comeback in the second half. They, you know, kind of the way their defense does, very opportunistically, forced some kind of weird stuff to happen. They got an interception. Central Michigan missed a couple of field goals. There was an opportunity there for Washington State to come back and win the game, and they just couldn't quite put enough together offensively, turned it over on downs a couple of times, and just didn't put enough drives together in the second half to win. They came back. They looked better in the second half than they did in the first half. First half was just a lot of three and outs, a lot of three and outs for both teams. Again, I don't mean to keep hammering the point, not an enjoyable football game to watch.
Washington State scored 0 points against Central Michigan in the first half. Zero. Like, how do you do that? 240 yards total, 18 rushing yards in this game, 3.7 yards per play. We talked about what Oklahoma did. Was it 8.1? This is 3.7, significantly worse. Sometimes you see a game, Dave, where, you know, a team might not be great on third down because they're just picking up 8 yards on first down, 6 yards on second down. They just kind of move along. And, you know, that one time they punt, they did face a third down. Washington State was 1 of 16 on third down. And they also went for it 5 times on fourth down, got only one of those. So 2 of 21 on third and fourth down in this game. Obviously, that's not going to go over very well. You mentioned they have been very opportunistic. They got 2 turnovers in this game. They won the turnover battle 2-1. But, I mean, the way they were playing on offense, you would have needed to get 5 or 6 turnovers. It was a good comeback in the second half. Central Michigan only scored a late field goal in the fourth quarter. But, you know, being down, you know, 21-0 at halftime, like, I don't know what are you going to do there? It just didn't seem like you were scrambling to get this game and you were going to, like, hey, play anyone, play anywhere. Like, come on, let's make this happen. You find an opponent and did you just not care? I don't know. I'm not sure what happened here, but this was a game controlled by Central Michigan, sort of hold on at the end to win. But this is a bad, bad showing for the Pac-12. Like, this was a game you were more than a touchdown favorite. We didn't pick this on the show, but Dave tweeted the line. So we just both picked Washington State, like, literally knowing nothing about Central Michigan. And obviously we were way wrong on this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. You're talking about one of the best teams in the MAC. Let's not denigrate them any more than we have to.
They were 8-4 coming to this one. So, I mean, but still, it's like it's MACtion. Bad MACtion for the Washington State Cougs. And we did use the meow, which we haven't used for quite a while with Washington State. But this was a disappointing one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very disappointing. And then the last one, the grand daddy of them all, we've got the Rose Bowl and
Utah Utes
taking on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Just a nut.
Just a nut. In a protective case.
Yeah, in a protective case of sorts. Utah. This was an actual good football game. I would say the best football game I watched of bowl season.
Very good football. Very good.
It was
good.
A really, really good game. Tons of fun. Prompted, you know, some tweets like, why do they play any games besides the Rose Bowl? Ever. Like, don't play any other football games at all, but certainly not any other bowl games. This was awesome. Both teams really came to play. I think all the bullshit from game day where Herb Street was like, these guys don't love football anymore or whatever, blah, 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 blah. This game kind of, I mean, just by itself sort of disproves that theory. Like, so many guys just leaving it all out there. It was really just blow for blow. Utah came out just firing on all cylinders. Cam Rising looked great. Just doing everything. Utah couldn't really run the ball very well early, but they were still trying. They made special teams plays. Britton Covey had a great touchdown. But Ohio State just kept firing back. CJ Stroud's incredible. Like, some of the throws he was making were just nuts. And yeah, there were some blown coverages later on, but early on he was hitting guys like over the shoulder perfectly, like right in the exact spot it needed to be at the right time. Some of the best quarterbacking I've seen all year. There were late game heroics. Bryson Barnes has to come into the game. He's a walk on, and he throws himself just a beautiful touchdown. And at that point, everyone's screaming, Kyle, you go for two. You do not kick the point after. And it ends up not mattering. But he should have gone for two. You do not want to get into overtime against Ohio State with Bryson Barnes as your quarterback. But he played his butt off at the end. Micah Bernard was playing both ways for most of this game. He took a bunch of snaps at running back. Also, I didn't really see him go off the field at cornerback. He got picked on a little bit. But frankly, watching him, I was like, he looks the part. I mean, he's not getting just blown away in coverage. He was right there most of the time, even when he was getting caught on. It was just a great game. It was a really fantastic game. And I think when you look at the like raw stats of it, Ohio State did win and should have won. But Utah played its butt off. It was great to see Britton Covey have a really, really big game in his last game. And just, you know, it's a shame that Utah couldn't pull it off and get the win. But I think if you're a Utah fan, you've got to be just absolutely ecstatic about the way the season went, ecstatic about your showing in the Rose Bowl, and also, given what might return, ecstatic about the potential for next year.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker, right? This was one that I think Utah had four different 14-point leads. This, you know, there was opt-outs, obviously, and, you know, some injuries and things for both sides. Ohio State, you weren't sure like what the motivation was going to be, but CJ Stroud threw for 15,000 yards, something like that. It was, I don't know the exact number in front of me, yeah, but it was 7,000
of which went to Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yes. It was funny because he was like the third best right wide receiver on the team. The two best guys opt out, you know, like Olave is one of the best, you know, in the country. And it sort of was just like, okay, well, what if both those guys played, could the passing offense been better? Because I mean, how could the passing offense have been any better than what it was? Maybe they were just spread it out a little bit more.
Well, that's the part that I'm like, the people whining after the game about, well, Ohio State did this and they've had to play a close game, but it's because they had so many guys out. And I'm like, look, Utah played, it's like what, former three-star running back, like 60 snaps at cornerback in this game.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of five-star receivers who are like third or fourth in your depth chart. But yeah, when Smith or Harrison or Igbuka get pushed up there to play in a bunch, you know what they look like? Five-star receivers.
Yeah.
Because they are. That's who they are.
Instead of throwing it to three five-star receivers, you threw it to one. But he set all kinds of records. And it was tough. This was a tough one for the Utes because you were in control and you had, what was it, that fourth and one play in the, you know, with the quarterback run and just go, you know, takes it to the house. Britton Covey with the kick return. I mean, like, there was just so many cool plays by Utah, and it seemed like, oh, here comes Ohio State. And Utah would respond, like, time after time after time. And, you know, it's tough. And then, you know, with the injury at the quarterback spot, and you're like, okay, where are they going from here? Like you said, like, it looked like, uh-oh, Utah's done. And like, nope, they're going to keep playing. Like, it doesn't matter. Throw the next guy in there, and here we go. And at the very end of the game, we mentioned this a little bit earlier, you know, Utah should have let Ohio State score to get the ball back. Instead, they let Ohio State kind of run the clock out and kick a field goal, and then it's over.
Well, okay, so there was a lot of stupid. I want to break this down.
Because, okay, let's go.
Okay, sure, they should have let them score. The other team has a role in that, and Ohio State may have not wanted to score. But what about your timeouts?
Yeah,
Utah had three. And look, I understand that, like, the difference between 5 seconds and 19 seconds isn't that big of a deal. But with 26 seconds to go when it's first and 10 at the Utah 11, even though it only increases your chances infinitesimally, you have to start using all of your timeouts right then. Every play, use a timeout. So that when they kick the field goal, it's like 18 seconds left, not whatever it ended up being, 9, whatever it was. Because then you can actually do a regular return and actually do a play and then do your Hail Mary or whatever it's going to be, a hook and ladder, whatever. But it does meaningfully increase your chances of victory. And if you wanted to use those timeouts earlier, maybe you could have improved your defense in those final whatever. What was it? It was like four straight plays where they ran for almost 10 yards. Maybe you can make an adjustment, make a switch, do something that's going to throw them off. In addition to stopping the clock. But the timeout usage was non-existent. They didn't use any of them. They walked into the end of the game with three timeouts. Then you also have Ryan Day going brain dumb. Why, dear God, are you kicking on second and one at the Utah 2? Run one more play and tell your running back, no matter what the hell you do, you fall down before that goal line. No matter what. But you're running another play because at worst, you're getting another 3 seconds off the clock and potentially preventing Utah from getting a kickoff return for a touchdown. Why the hell are you kicking that field goal with 9 seconds to go? Makes no sense.
I don't get it either. And it's disappointing because I could have covered this. It didn't happen. They kicked the field goal. There, a lot of things could have happened where it just, you know, they score a touchdown there and the game's over. And Ohio State wins by 7 and I go 4-1 in the bowls, but that wasn't meant to be. You had Utah on this one. To be fair, Utah was winning most of the time, but you just felt like Ohio State, you know, given enough time, they were going to be able to overcome Utah and just getting stops. Utah just was having a really hard time getting stops, and they let Ohio State kind of go all over the place, but so much fire Utah played with. Yeah, I don't like some of the end game stuff, not using any of those timeouts.
It wasn't that big of a deal because it wouldn't have meaningfully changed anything. It was just annoying to watch a very good game plagued by, and it wasn't just Whittingham. Ryan Day was being very stupid too. That's kind of getting lost in the whole thing. But see, the ball stops at 12 seconds to go on the Utah 2, right? They call timeout then. Just wait. You don't need to call timeout then. Or have your, whatever it was, have your quarterback spike the ball with 3 seconds to go or whatever the hell it's going to be. But you don't need to call your timeout right then. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, this would have been at least like, hey, at least the Pac-12 won the Rose Bowl, you know? It was sort of the worst of both worlds. They didn't, you know, Utah ends up covering and they still lost the game. But
whatever. It was.
I wanted really Utah to win this one. I mean, this would have been a nice little, okay, 1-4 in the bowl game as opposed to, you know, to 0-5 is bad. But yeah, it's a tough one. You know, Cam Rising obviously was a complete, absolute stud. And it's tough to see him go down. I don't know how serious the injury was. I haven't seen a follow up on that. But man, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
There's one game we didn't get to talk about. So the Holiday Bowl, which is always a fun one, and the
UCLA Bruins.
That's because UCLA waited until 4.5 hours before the game to decide to cancel it.
Where do you stand on this one? Because like NC State coach was pissed. He was talking. You know, he was.
So the NC State coach is a big whiner, and he should be laughed at. Here's the thing. I think, okay, it had to be canceled because of the positive tests, and that's just the rules right now. Whatever. I mean, I'm not here to debate the COVID stuff. What I am here to say is, was there another bowl game that was canceled with 4 hours to go?
I don't think so.
Whatever is going on, whatever it is the wrong thing. Whatever's going on with either UCLA or their decision-making, apparatus is wrong. Whatever it is that resulted in that is wrong. Either you need to be much more conservative in your cancellations and just cancel it 3 days ahead of time, even when you have the requisite number of players, because you know that this could happen, or you have to be really, really proactive in your communication, and UCLA was neither. So this cancellation either had to come earlier, and you're very conservative, and that's just who you are, or you have to be really, really transparent and communicative about, hey, we're really close to having to cancel. We're not there yet, but it could happen if we get a few more positive tests. So we need to let everyone know there's a really good chance this could happen. And so we want to let NC State know. We want to let our fans know that just the nature of this beast, that's what's going on. And they didn't do that. There was reporting from like our site and a couple other outlets that, some guys were missing time, but there wasn't even an indication given to us that there was a real chance that this was going to happen. There was no preparation for it. So I completely understand NC State being kind of shocked by it, but also like fans being pissed off, because it's one thing to have something pulled out from under you. Like, I thought I was going to go to San Diego and watch this bowl game. And it's another thing to do it when you've gotten a little bit of notice, like, oh, I'm going to San Diego. I'm still going to try to go watch this bowl game. But, I've heard that there's a real good chance that this could get canceled. Anybody going into anything in the year of our Lord 2022 and the end of 2021 understands that COVID happens and this kind of stuff can happen. But it's the courtesy. It's the basic politeness. Let people know what's going on. Because this has happened now with a few different UCLA events, so I'm less likely to give benefit of the doubt right now, because they had a basketball game they canceled with like 45 minutes of notice. Wow. People were already on campus. People were already in the stadium, and they canceled the game. That kind of stuff can't be happening this deep into COVID. Just can't. You've got to have a better apparatus. Got to have a better understanding of what's going on.
It's like the Antonio Brown stuff. Like, yeah, maybe like, you know, the Bucks did something wrong or whatever, making them play with through an injury or whatever it was. But like, your track record is, all right, I'm not giving you the benefit of doubt in this one. And if you're saying that this is happening with UCLA a lot, it just seemed like the communication was poor.
It's communication. That's the main thing. Cause I'm not even all about them being like super conservative and just canceling everything, but be better about how you're talking to people about this. It cannot be any longer, oh, there were COVID protocols that prevented this. Like, you've got to give first a TikTok, like, doesn't need to be names, but we got this many tests on this date. We got this many tests on this date. And it just happened very suddenly, if you're going to explain it away. But you've got to be more proactive. And frankly, if you didn't realize that this was a possibility, that's also a problem with your decision-making apparatus. It's not like this should spring on you suddenly. We saw defensive linemen dropping like flies the week before the bowl game. So if we can see that, we're, again, this deep into this very infectious disease, and right now the variant that's going around is the most infectious version of this infectious disease. So with all of that information, couldn't you just maybe project that it's going to infect more guys? Like that a few – so if you're a few bodies away from no longer being able to play, and it's a very infectious disease, and you're a few bodies away on, say, the Monday before the game or the Sunday before the game – you might start thinking, okay, we got to have a contingency plan. We got to have an idea for what's going on here. And the most important thing to do in that situation is communicate, because you've got thousands of people traveling to this game, spending a lot of money. You've got the other team that could potentially get San Diego State or just some like local friggin' whatever. It could be an FCS team, but somebody to play in the Holiday Bowl. So the Holiday Bowl also doesn't get out a bunch of money. And they just didn't do any of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else from the recap?
No. I don't want to talk about these bowl games anymore.
Okay. Let's. I don't know if we've mentioned, but we didn't know at the time Washington State and Miami. That was actually going to look like it'd be a good game. Miami had to pull out early. It was cool that Washington State at least got an opponent, but it wasn't cool that they
had. You know why they were allowed to get an opponent? Because they had time.
Time.
Because Miami pulled out with enough time.
Yeah.
To let them do that.
Yeah. They communicated well.
They did.
It was a breakup, but, you know, no, there was no hard feelings.
Exactly.
North Carolina State, there's some hard feelings there.
Yeah, very hard feelings.
Understandable. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and answer some questions. All right, we're back here on the podcast of Champions. We got some regular voicemailers in there. And do you remember why we talked about the Stanford fans last time?
Okay, so this is funny. We asked for every Stanford fan to email us and just say, I am a Stanford fan.
Okay.
We got two people emailed in.
Howard, he said, I'm a Stanford fan. A little tree icon, which was very cool. And then
Jeremy actually has a question.
Oh, so you want to do that first?
Stanford fan Jeremy. Greetings. I'm an avid Stanford football fan and regularly listen to the podcast of Champions. Even though Stanford fans are regularly maligned on the podcast, still we endure. We remember when Andrew Luck was lighting up the competition. We remember when Christian McCaffrey and Bryce Love were the most exciting athletes the Pac-12 was featuring. Verbal abuse cannot dampen our spirit. Stanford's recent decline is clearly a result of the early signing period. You can draw a straight line from the start of the early signing period in 2017 to the recent decline of Stanford football. Until recently, many Stanford football players wouldn't find out if they were even accepted until early January. It appears that David Shaw has rectified that situation based upon the recent stellar recruiting class. Things are turning around. What else would you expect from a coach with three Pac-12 titles? David and Ryan can now look forward to Stanford once again dominating UCLA and USC on the gridiron. The last few seasons must have been unsettling with UCLA-USC actually winning a couple. Don't worry, normality is returning. All right now, baby, it's all right now. Best regards, Jeremy. Jeremy, that was some real opium right there.
It was good. I know there was only two Stanford fans, but still, Jeremy brought it. And I did like Howard's tree icon, which you can't see because this is a, you know, audio, not a visual medium. But what did you think about the early signing period stuff?
I mean, it's a really long and convoluted way of spelling steroids, but yeah, sure. I would say I could understand that being a somewhat of a problem for Stanford to navigate, but the kind of guy that Stanford's going to get, I don't know that they'd be too thrown off by having to wait until the late signing period, frankly.
Yeah. And I, you know, even though Stanford was 3-9, Jeremy, they did beat USC this year. So, wins over USC and Oregon.
Hell yeah, baby.
That's why you got to keep David Shaw around. Just like Chip Kelly, got to keep him around, you know, putting 62 points up on your rival.
I'm not.
Where are we at through the extension? Like, is there
10 years? As far as we know, nothing has been agreed upon or signed.
Wow. There was some talk, even afterwards, I know you might have got a little giddy, that he could end up somewhere else or they could have a parting of ways
I would not. I would still not be shocked if something like that were to happen. I'm not going to talk about it too much because I don't want to talk about it. It's like, you know, something you anticipate where if you talk about it too much, you're like, it's probably not going to happen now.
Yeah. Well, like Mel Tucker getting the 10-year, $95 million. Chip gets 10 years, $98 million. I think that's probably fair. We'll go somewhere in that range. We'll see. Okay. Let's go to her first voicemail.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I was kind of wanting to get your thoughts on the situation with players opting out in the bowl game, and not necessarily opting out, because I totally get why they're doing that, but on some of them not playing in the games, but still going to the games. I think it was Kenny Pickett for Pitt that like sat up in the press box or one of the suites for the bowl game. I'm not sure. I just heard about that. And then also I saw Chris Olave on the sidelines for Ohio State. And while I understand like not necessarily wanting to punish the player or make him feel bad, at the same time though, I do think it is kind of awkward in the sense that like you're just standing on the sidelines, not because you're injured, but because you're just choosing not to play. So I was wondering if you guys had a take on that. Not to sound like everybody's anger grandpa, but I don't know. It seemed kind of like a weird situation over the bowl games. I just wanted you guys' thoughts. Happy New Year, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I haven't gotten excited about the opting out at all. I don't really care. And I think that's kind of best handled internally within a team. If they're all supportive of Olave and the whole thing, then if they want him on the sideline with them, then what the hell? Why not? Conversely, if they don't, then I think it's, whatever. They can decide, this guy quit on us, so no, he doesn't have a place out there. But the attitudes I've seen from players have been mostly uniformly supportive of their teammates who have opted out. I think a lot of these guys, you got to understand, a lot of these guys are, they're big on their personal success and their ability to go play in the NFL. And I think the younger guys on some of these teams, they want to be in the position that Chris Olave is in at some point, where they can make a decision about whether or not to opt out because they want to prepare for the NFL draft. So I think there's your attitude as a fan or our attitudes as fans and observers is going to be very different from the guys on the sidelines. So I think if you're concerned about like it being uncomfortable for guys on the sideline to be like, accompanied by somebody who's opting out, that's not the sense I get from players about their feelings regarding opting out. If it's you who's uncomfortable watching it, I get that. But, whatever. There's a lot of people on the sidelines who I'm uncomfortable being out there. Most of them are very rich.
Yeah. Perk. I mean, does he want to be like the old man yelling at a cloud here?
Apparently.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I feel the same way. Like, I agree with Perk. Like, I am up for, unlike David, I do like player mobility. I don't care if you committed to one school and burned Chip Kelly in UCLA and now you're going to Oklahoma. Like, fine. That's fine. The day of classes starting. Do what you want. Like, you're the player. You get one. You get what? You get a free one. If you transfer again, I think you got to sit out. And if you want to opt out, I have no problem with it. The Kirk Herbstreit comments, I think he does a great job. I didn't really felt that went over well, but this is a guy that talks for hours on end constantly. He does two games a week. You're going to say something dumb in that. And then sometimes you say something dumb, you're like, I'd like to take that back. I don't think he did a great job of taking it back. But I feel like this is a situation where if, someone opts out, and I think it was Matt Corral. Like, so they're like, oh, see, Matt Corral got hurt and blah, blah, blah. I have no problem if players want to opt out of the bowl game. I do have a problem with them being there. Like, if you're going to go get ready for the draft, go get ready for the draft. Like, this was a privilege, you being around this team. And you don't need to be here anymore. But I don't think players are going to say, hey, I don't want him there. But if, basic psychology classes are like, he's not here. He's not playing with us. I don't think it's helpful. I think players aren't going to be like, oh, where's Pickett? Why isn't he in the press box? Like, no, I'd rather them just like, hey, he's moved on. He's not on the team anymore and he's somewhere else. And if I'm old man yelling a cloud for that, I so be it, but opt out all you want. But once you do, I'd rather you not be around the program anymore. Cause I do think it can be a distraction.
Okay. Baby brained old man.
I'm an old white guy. Just not even, caring. Okay, we got one more. We'll do an email and then I'll go back to the next voicemail. This is from Salt Lake City, Steven. I realize I shouldn't have asked this last week, but I didn't. He said I shouldn't have asked this last week, but I didn't.
I realize I should have.
Means he should have. Oh, I'm sorry. Reading's hard. Should have asked last week. Still relevant. In the December 17th episode, while talking about Colorado's recruiting class, Brandon Huffman said that Colorado's, quote, not the most fertile recruiting ground. I would say in the Pac-12, only Oregon has less Division I players sign each year than the state of Colorado. He said, starting at the 40-28 timestamp. Go back and listen, Dave. Is that accurate? I know. I don't even think you listened to the show at all because you weren't on that one. I'm not trying to be a dick and assume Huffman doesn't know what he's talking about, but considering the populations of the states in the Pac-12, it's pretty shocking to hear that Utah isn't at the bottom of the list. According to the 2020 census, Colorado has a population of 5.77 million. Oregon, 4.24 million. Utah, though it's by far the smallest of the conference with 3.27 million. He says Utah is by far the smallest. With such a huge population advantage over Utah, do fewer Division I players really come from Oregon and Colorado? That's from Steven.
Yeah, it is true, or at least I'm pretty sure it is. And the reason it is because of demographics, not necessarily the pure numbers. A lot of the people in Utah are more predisposed to be playing football, generally speaking. So you've got a big Polynesian community in Utah, which is why you see a lot of Utah linemen dotting the rosters for a lot of different Pac-12 programs. So, yeah, you do see it. It's a function of who actually lives in these states in addition to how many people live in these states. You know, California, quantity has a quality all its own. Washington, Arizona, similar. But then the rest of it, you get into a little bit more who actually lives there. And for Utah, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. There were studies and stuff done. When you look at, and you mentioned the Polynesian community, if you're like Samoan, you're 40 times more likely to play in the NFL than if you were just, not Samoan. Like they're the percentage that, you know, Tonga, all the Polynesian islands, those countries, just a much, much per capita. Like these are guys that are playing football at a much higher level and making it to the NFL. And I think that's a big part of the reason where you're seeing that in Utah. But just the culture, I mean, there's more high school football going on, I think, in Utah than what you're seeing in Oregon. And like politically, you know, there's reasons why less California, you know, still a crap load of Californians are playing, but it's going down, you know. And I think states like Oregon, they're going down more, where I don't feel like that's the case in a place like Utah. So, yeah, but that, I think the cultures, the demographics, I think all of that has a part to play in this.
Yeah. And if you want to look, Stephen, if you go onto 247's website, you can do under football recruiting. There's a player search function on whatever website you're looking through, whatever team site. And if you do the player search within that, you can filter by home state. So you can see how many recruits there are from different states. And it's, you know, just doing a quick search myself, it's pretty obvious that Utah's got a lot more, just eyeballing it. So welcome you to do that. It's kind of an interesting little tool. And you can also see the types of names that you see from different states. Utah's a ton of Polynesian.
Yeah. Not as many John Smiths in Utah.
Not so much. Well, there's a fair amount of John Smith.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's a bad example.
Yeah, come on, buddy. all right. This is from Frank in Sacramento. A giant has passed? No. Ooh, damn, we're getting some John Madden hate here. Mediocre announcer at best. Boom. Almost as obnoxious as Howard Cosell. Boom. He was a master of the obvious, sort of explaining what the hokey pokey was all about. He'd talk and then boom. He'd run out of things to say and blurt out Brett Favre. Boom. Frank Caliendo was much better and funnier at doing John Madden than he was himself. Frank in Sacramento. Holy crap.
This is a bad take. There was one guy on Twitter that wrote like about, I mean, he was basically complaining about like the NFL and it's like why it's bad for society and all this stuff. Like it's like you were just like, everyone loves this guy, so you need to take the opposite. And I feel like that's what Frank is doing here. And I forget who the writer was, but then people went back and looked at his Twitter and he was talking about his fantasy football team and stuff. It's like, yeah, you like football. You're just saying that you don't like football. And he perpetuated these blah, blah, blah. You know, everyone loved John Madden. And the way it happened where they released that, the documentary and he passes away a few days later. And I think it was Tom Rinaldi who does used to do a lot of college football stuff with ESPN. And now he's doing NFL work for Fox. I believe he said they made 42 or 38 interview requests, you know, for the documentary and nobody said no. And you get a lot of no's when you're doing things like that. So I think that tells you all you need to know. I just think this is a bad take. Sometimes you just want to be, you know, just go against the grain. You're swimming upstream on this one, but I think you're doing a bad job of it, Frank. Sorry.
Yeah, Frank. Bad take. Bad take.
You don't even like the NFL. And like, Madden's just great. Like,
yeah, no, big fat guy's talking about football. What's not to like?
He was funny. But Frank Kelly does, I mean, he became a better version of Madden because he was awesome when he was doing that. It's just so good. I love that. Like, loved him. Everything you'd hear about him was good. He's married to his wife for 60 something years. Like, there's sometimes you find someone that's just not a lot. Is he a perfect person? I'm sure he's not. But, you know, when you find someone like that, some people just want to tear him down. I don't get it. But sorry, don't agree with you on that one, Frank. Here's another voicemail for you.
What's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. And I had a question of David about, a while ago, he had said that he doesn't think Oregon is good. And he cited some advanced stats as to why. And after watching them at the end of the season, these last few games, you know, you kind of realize why he was saying that. So obviously those advanced stats are pretty good. So I just want to know what advanced stats was Dave looking at that proved Oregon wasn't very good. I know it seems like my last few calls have been kind of negative to Oregon, but, you know, I mean, I've called out my teams too. You know, I'm negative to basically every team in this conference. It's not very good. So I just simply want to know, you know, what advanced stats are Dave looking at, because it seems like they kind of predicted this kind of thing to happen. Oh, and then my next question is just, who did Ryan vote for Heisman? I believe he said he had a vote. So thank you, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, I look at a few different ones, but they were all kind of in consensus. So SP Plus is Bill Connolly's. It's just, you don't really get to go under the hood with it, which is the drawback, but it does kind of give you an overview of where teams, because it assesses dominance, not just your ability to like win games or not win games, but like, how are you winning these games? Are you winning them by hook and by crook? Are you winning them by luck? Or are you really just out and out dominating teams? And Oregon was rated pretty low in there. I also look at points per drive as just kind of a general metric for understanding what teams are doing. So net points per drive can be a really good kind of just benchmark understanding of, because it controls for pace then. And so you can find that, the best and easiest place to find it is a website called BCF Toys. It's Brian Fromau's, kind of just stat compendium, but bcftoys.com. And you just go to points per drive up at the top. That'll give you a ranking of, where teams stand. Oregon was the 46th best team in net points per drive this year. They were worse than ASU. They were worse, clearly, than Utah. They were worse than UCLA. Now, that might be a little aggressive, depending on your ability, your desire to get into the advanced stats. But I think that is more of a true appraisal of where Oregon was as a team this year. The FEI ratings, that's also from Al. It's largely based on the points per drive, but that can be really good. Simple stuff like College Football Reference, the SRS ratings, I think, are they're fine. They're pretty good. They give you kind of the same gist. And you can find those at College Football Reference. It's a stats compendium. But there's a lot of different things if you look around. And you can kind of, if you look at enough different things, you can kind of get a consensus.
Yeah, I have a hard time finding some of that stuff sometimes. Like the SP Plus, like there's not like a, here's the SP Plus section of ESPN. It's like you have to find Bill Connolly's article.
The way they have dealt with Connolly since hiring him, I think they've done an absolute disservice to like college football, because he was starting to get like a lot of attention when it was back at SB Nation, and his S&P Plus was starting to become more mainstream. And ESPN has thrown it behind a paywall and made it not something you can find easily. You have to literally go and find the most recent article that he's written to find the SP Plus.
That's it, right? Like, that's what you have to do.
It's really stupid. They've done a horrible job with him. I hope he gets out of that contract sometime soon. I'm sure he's getting paid a bundle, but
you think hopefully. They're like shutting him down or something? Is that essentially what they're doing? Or
no, it's what they've been doing with him since they hired him. But it's really stupid. I've hated the way they've used him, because it's also putting all of this stuff that was like, he was very good about like just providing all of it to everyone. He had these great, if you were writing a preview about a team in the offseason, he would develop these like spreadsheets that gave you like his advanced projections of like literally the most minute details about these teams. And it was completely open source. It was just, well, not open source, but completely free to everyone. Just this long spreadsheet of literally every single team in college football. They've hidden all that stuff.
And then he wanted to know about the Heisman vote. So Bryce Young, I had as the winner. I put Cody Pickett for the Pitt quarterback at number two. And like I think I mentioned this on the show, I like to put some West Coast, you know, flair in there, which has been really hard to do. But I put Devin Lloyd in there. So
beautiful.
Give him a the Utah linebacker a little love. All right. Cool. This is from Sparky's roommate. He says Ryan and David. This is the Pac-12 days of Christmas. 12 days of Christmas start on Christmas Day, which means that this is the week of the 12 days of Christmas. And so, so he sent this in a few days ago. And so I bring to you the final verse of the Pac-12 days of Christmas. I expect David to sing this to the best of his ability. Oh, you want to sing? Okay.
All right. So I'm not going to sing the full song, obviously, just the final verse.
This is the final verse.
Okay. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 beavers damming, 11 cougars cooging, 10 ducks a-quacking, 9 Trojans fighting, 8 Bruins clapping, 7 Utes a-running, 6 devils sunning, 5 golden bears, 4 bearing down, 3 huskies, 2 buffaloes, and something cardinal in a dumb tree. So we had too many syllables in the last line. That was the only note. The only note should have been, and a cardinal in a dumb tree.
Very good.
That's what it needed to be.
Or you could do, and something cardinal in a dumb tree. You could have sung it that way, too.
Yeah, you could have, but it's not quite right.
Okay. But I thought that was a great effort by Sparky's roommate.
It was good. It was good.
Cougars cooging, you know. Beavers are damming. Cougars are cooging.
I loved it.
Ducks are quacking. The eight clapping.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right. Peter in Vancouver?
Oh, let's see. I think that we got one left. Okay.
Last one. Pac-12 Bowl. Gentlemen, before the bowl season, I asked if it mattered how Pac-12 teams did in their bowl games. David didn't think the bowl record was important at all. Today, I read this in Yahoo Sports. But this stink will linger longer into the offseason. Pac-12 teams went 0-5 in bowl play in the latest national embarrassment for a conference accustomed to bringing up the rear for the Power Five. Obviously, the Pac-12's bowl record mattered to someone. I'll ask again in a different way. What record would the Pac-12 have needed so that they wouldn't have been written up as a national embarrassment? Peter in Vancouver.
Hey, Peter. I didn't know Yahoo Sports was British, but apparently it is.
Whatever. I'll tell you what it would have needed to be. Can I tell you? You ready for it?
I have a guess.
1-4.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Literally all they needed to do was have that Rose Bowl game flip the other way.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think there's like the record doesn't matter that much. And then there's the you didn't win one. Like it matters to not win at all. It matters to go 0-for, you know. You're playing a 3-game series and you go 1-for-11 at the plate. Like, all right, we got a hit, you know, 1-for-11 with a hit and a walk, maybe a sacrifice fly or something. You go 0-for, you're 0-for-13. Like, that's a big difference.
You go 0-for and one of your teams did the worst job managing COVID possible by not communicating correctly.
Yes. That's bad. I think there was a lot of talk about the SEC who started like 1-5. I think the SEC finished with a losing record, but they were in 13 of the games or whatever. And they obviously got two teams in the finals. But, you know, I think it mattered that the SEC had a losing record just because they're just known as the best conference. And you could look at the SEC as being like more top heavy than anything else, which was just fine. And, you know, if the Pac-12 was 2-3 or 3-2, I think 5-0 would have been like, oh, okay, that's interesting, you know. But 0-5 is also, oh, that's interesting. Like you couldn't win a single game.
That's right.
You know, that's bad. So, some things don't matter that much, but it matters when you stink that badly that you haven't won a bowl game since after the last bowl game that the Pac-12 won was the Rose Bowl. So very early in 2020, January 1st. So that's the last time the Pac-12 won a bowl game, and that's not good.
Not good. Not good.
2019 season. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap things up.
That'll wrap it.
Yeah. We'll try to get on a regular schedule. Probably try to get some guests on. We'll see if David's going to be contributing to any of that. But if you have any questions about the teams that you like, that you want us to ask the different publishers that we will try to get on, we can certainly do that. There's been a lot of turnover roster wise, coaching wise. So we'll try to dig into all that and kind of get people up to speed. Who's going, who's staying, opting out, transfers in, you know, following up with, we already did the recruiting class stuff, but there's obviously a lot more that's been going on. We got the, All-Star games going on now. I'm heading out to Hawaii, Dave, for the Polynesian Bowl. I guess it's a week and a half or so. That should be fun.
When is that?
The 17th, I believe. So like, yeah, 11 days. We're recording this on the 6th. So yeah, so it'll be Monday. I go out Monday, and I think the game's on Saturday, but I'm going to leave Friday. So I'm just going there for the practices and stuff.
Cool. Very fun.
You want to go out there? You want to come? You want to join?
Maybe. We'll see.
We'd have as good of a time as we did in Vegas for the Pac-12 championship game.
You would, yeah, you would love exactly. It. We'll have a great time.
Yeah. So tons of fun. It's funny. We got a PM from one of our listeners from Utah. She's great. She's, PM'd me a little bit when I was in Las Vegas and stuff, and was asking about New Year's Eve and was like, I assume everyone's going to be hanging out in Pasadena. And I was like, no, do you ever go to Pasadena except for the bowl game? Right. Or
no, God, why would anybody drive all the way up there for anything other than the bowl game?
Right. If you live in that area, that's fine. But it's funny. Like, people don't understand where you live. Like, you essentially stay in your bubble most of the time, or maybe you're going to go out to Hollywood or something. But if you live in the South Bay, where we are, you're not hey, let's go to Pasadena tonight. Like, no, that just doesn't happen. But it's funny. Like, people don't get it. Like, oh, you're going to downtown LA, right? Like, no, we're not going there. I'm going to Staples Center to go to a Laker game or something, but I am not going to downtown LA for just about anything else.
Absolutely. But,
if you're in Salt Lake City, you probably go downtown somewhere, right? Or whatever. But that LA is just a different beast. So it was kind of funny to see that. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast of champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Maybe this is the new year. Maybe we'll see some bowl wins this time around. But for David, I'm Ryan. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.